friends of Jesus Christ. As you know, we are during the season of Easter, looking at some of the virtues that flow out of our Easter faith. And last week we did hopefulness. Today I want to do faithfulness, and then next week stewardship, which means, of course, that next week you take not your notepads but your checkbooks. And then there's joy and humility. Anyway, the virtues of the Easter faith. And today, faithfulness. Faithfulness, the dictionary defines faithfulness as a steadfast affection, or being steadfast in your allegiance. The faithful person is one who is unswerving in his or her allegiance to people or values or promises. To be faithful is to be true, reliable, dependable. You're a man or a woman of her word, a promise keeper, faithful. Now, in the Bible, when it speaks of faithfulness, it most often refers to a loyalty within the covenant relationship. And so God, for instance, is most often described, his very name embodies faithfulness. I am the one who will be there for you. God is faithful. So in our passage, in verse 23, you know, the writer says, "Hold fast to the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who has promised is faithful." Trustworthy. God is worthy of our trust, not fickle, not unreliable. Now the fact that the scriptures describe God as one who commits, who keeps promises, it's really quite remarkable that he would tie himself down like that to a people. I mean, you know, you and I in our conversations will sometimes say things like, "Well, you do what you need to do, but don't count on me." Or we say, "You know, I need some freedom." Or, "You know, I can't be tied down." And here is the God of the Bible who says, "You can count on me. I will use my freedom to redeem you. I will tie myself down to your future," to the point where he is, of course, nailed to a tree. Anyway, the faithfulness of God is to be our faithfulness. I remember Lou Smeeds years ago talking about God being a promise keeper, and Smeeds saying that when you and I make promises and do our level best to keep those promises, we are most like God. Faithfulness. Now, it's obvious that faithfulness is not intrinsically valuable, right? I mean, faithfulness becomes valuable depending on what you are faithful to or to whom you're faithful. I mean, if you're faithful to something awful, it only makes things worse. The hitman, for instance, who swears allegiance to the Godfather is not to be praised. Faithfulness in crime is criminal. In one little essay that I read on faithfulness, the author quotes a philosopher who has this to say on this. He says, "Is fidelity or faithfulness, is it praiseworthy or not?" And then he writes, "It all depends." In other words, everything hinges on the values to which one is being faithful. Faithful to what? He says, "No one calls resentment a virtue, though it's a kind of faithfulness to hatreds or anger. And no one calls pettiness a virtue either, though it too is a kind of fidelity to little things, a tenacious hold for the trivial. Hence, the virtue we seek is not fidelity of any kind whatsoever, but only good fidelity, noble fidelity." We want a noble faithfulness. So to what should we be faithful? To what or to whom are you faithful? For this Easter season, wouldn't it be exactly right for us to say, we will be faithful to the resurrection? We will define ourselves as heirs of the resurrection. We are an Easter people. That's how we are describing ourselves. That defines us, an Easter people. And as such, here's how we live, and we will be faithful to it. This whole business of how you define yourself strikes me as terribly important. I mean, out in the world, there are these three main categories, race, gender, and sexual orientation. And every category comes with a script. Certain things that are expected of you in those categories. Well, we say a play in all of it. We are an Easter people. That's what defines us. That sets forth our script that we will be faithful to. And you say, well, that's good, but what does it mean to be an Easter people? And what's the script? You see, and then I think the Hebrew says is extremely important in defining ourselves, in defining yourself. As you read this section, especially it seems to me those first seven verses, an Easter people are a people who have gained entrance into the sanctuary. That's in verse 19. We have gained with confidence to enter the sanctuary by the blood of Jesus. You know, he by the new and living way, he opened for us through the curtain. And since we have a high priest, our great priest over the house of God, let us approach with a true heart in full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. But it's this fact that through the ministry of Christ, his death, resurrection, and ascension, we have been given access. We're not simply pew sitters going through rituals, but we are given the privilege of being in communion with majesty. We are given a welcome to what the human heart longs for, the presence of God. We come not as strangers, not even as guests, but as children of God. And it strikes me that hardly anything more significant could happen this morning than if you and I were to say to ourselves again, I am someone who should and can delight in the presence of God. We have access. Ready access into the sanctuary. So that whatever has happened to you this week, it may have been awful. Let it drive you into the sanctuary. Be true to whom you are. Someone who is in communion with God. Okay? And it's not just but it's not only that we have this communion with God, we are also defined as a community. I mean, it is therefore my dear friends, or therefore brothers and sisters. It's all in the plural. We come to God as a community. And so later on it says, do not neglect to meet together. So we come as a community. This is not a solo flight that we're on. We don't homeschool the soul. It takes a church. We are a community. You are a member of the community, a brother and a sister, a friend of Christ's, and of all those who call him friend. Not only that, we are defined by the fact that we have been washed clean. We've been accepted. We ought to rid ourselves of self-hate or self-loathing. We ought to rid ourselves of feelings of superiority. We have been washed in the blood. Now, you know, I was thinking about how important that is to simply accept yourself so that you could actually forget yourself. You know, have you ever had it? You've had a long day, and then you have a meeting, and you're afraid that as you enter the meeting, that you may have developed a little BO. isn't it, I mean, it's a silly little example, but isn't it terribly hard to sort of let go and be a part of the group? You're constantly holding your arms to your side. You're afraid they're all thinking about who is it that brought this in? Right? Well, now it's not B.O., it's your acceptance. I mean, if you think you have some agenda with someone, it's very hard to sit and simply forget yourself. Well, the scriptures say you and I ought to be done with these foolish things of self-hate or self-glorification, but see ourselves as accepted. So we are people who are in communion with God. We are that as a community. We are that as accepted. We are that as those who hold on to the promises of an unimaginable future. Now, you know, we talked about that last week, but I mean, I can imagine things happening to us that could simply derail you. I mean, the stock market goes down and a third of your retirement is gone. You were hoping for a graduate school and you get a no thanks response. Your child is diagnosed with some illness. I mean, all kinds of things could simply land you in the land of despair. But to be faithful to whom we are as an Easter people means that we commune with God. We push ourselves back into that sanctuary and we clutch the hope that we have in God through Christ. And then finally, of course, we are defined as a people who are to provoke one another to deeds of love and goodness. So this is who we are. We are an Easter people who have gained access to the sanctuary, who can enter with boldness the very presence of God as a people cleansed in the blood of Christ. Now, how do we become faithful to that? And of course, faithfulness about anything is something that comes only with practice. It comes with practice. It's a habit. It's a habit that you don't get overnight, but over time. And it's a virtue or a practice that doesn't come without lots of failure. But you know, I've said that before. Falling is not failing. It's staying on the ground that's failing. Falling and rising again, falling and rising again is the only way in which you and I learn the virtue of faithfulness. Now there's a lot that militates, that presents obstacles on the road to this faithfulness. I mean, on Monday, Thursday, when we gather for worship, we have this line that we repeat over and over again, which has always been, I think, very telling. We say, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. And it's weak not just because it's tired so quickly, but it's weak in that it so easily becomes jaded, so that we actually think that the real significant things happen on the Tim Russert Meet the Press show or NBC or Washington, D.C., and not around the Word, and not in worship, and not in the sanctuary. We grow jaded so that we become tired both in worship and of worship. And when that happens, it's very easy to just wander, let the wind take you where it will, and you're not faithful. We're not faithful as an Easter people. And it's not only that the flesh is weak, but our society, our culture. I mean, everyone tells you, and I think we experience it. Our culture is almost committed to being uncommitted. You know, leave your options open. It's a disposable society. Relationships are disposable. People shack up together, but make no commitments. They want to have the possibility of others. Even in church, I mean, if a difficulty arises, we just jump ship. There's this underlying, here's what I think, free agents. Basically, we see ourselves as free agents or as consumers. And society keeps pushing that identity on us. You're free agents. You're a consumer. And we come here to say, no, we are first of all and primarily an Easter people. And to develop a habit that will keep us faithful to our identity, it seems to me that the very first thing that you might want to say to yourself is something very negative. I mean, verses 26 through 31. For if we willfully persist in sin, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins. Now, when you heard that read, didn't that make you just a little uncomfortable? Shall I tell you, when I gave my passage to the, I think it was Nancy at the time who was doing the bulletin, I said, maybe we should skip verses 26 and 30 through 31. And then Nancy says, Jack, it is in the Bible. And of course, she's exactly right. The thing that makes me just a little reluctant is that so often when you read that stern warning kind of thing, so often our minds go to others, either in spite or with a great sadness. You see, and my advice to you is to say this. About others, commend them to God's mercy. But to yourself, take this warning to heart. It is a splendid and awesome thing to live before the face of God. Don't play fast and loose. Be careful with the habits that are formed in your life. Make sure that your face is towards the sanctuary and not your back. Do not allow yourselves to become a stranger. So there's this warning, and the warning, it is to put some steel in our resolve, to be faithful to our identity as an Easter people. So that's first, this negative. The much more positive would be to say, celebrate this communion with God in the company of others. I mean, this sounds maybe a little trite, but it's really important to have great worship. Just great worship. And you know, the people who lead, they can do what they can, but ultimately it is you and I coming together with a deep longing to encounter the living God, to see again that this is true, that we are pilgrims on the way to a holy place. I mean, it is just so important that we long to realize the gift that we've been given, namely entrance into the sanctuary. You see, and when we gather for worship, we immerse ourselves always into the stories of the gospel, the stories that reveal God's faithfulness, the stories that reveal human faithfulness and human unfaithfulness. But in it all, God gathering his people to make for himself a holy nation. This need for worship, and not to be neglectful. You know, now this is, I don't know, you know, the Apostle Paul would say, now this is not the Lord. But I sometimes worry about summers coming, because there are too many opportunities for people to just drop off and not be around for the next 3 or 4 months. Now maybe that's just absolutely necessary, and God bless you, but for the rest of us, We ought to encourage one another. We ought to be present. We ought to be able to see one another's faces. Even if you never speak to the other person, you know that this person will be there. And he may have had a rough week, but there he is, singing praises. That woman, she may have lost her child, but there she is, giving me the bread, sharing with me the wine. It is not a small thing to be a community that encourages one another to be faithful to our relationship to God. There's a book by Deb Reinstra, a member of our church. They're living in California for the last couple of years. But she wrote a wonderful book, and I've just been sort of reading through it and picking up things for this sermon. But, she says, let's see, where is that? Oh, she says she has one ambition for her old age. Oh, this is Deb Reinstra, and the book is So Much More, An Invitation for Christian Spirituality. And she says her one ambition in life is for my old age to be a church lady. Not the kind who turns bitter, complaining, and judgmental, but the kind who has grown nearer to wisdom and peace. She says, I will be the lady in the same pew or whatever else we may be sitting in then, every Sunday, and I'll know all the little kids' names, and I'll show up at the potlucks and volunteer to tutor the neighborhood kids. I'll sing loudly, even though the people standing around me will secretly wish that I would retire my voice. But mostly I will pray. I will pray for the people. I will pray for them even when they haven't asked for prayers. She says, I need more work on my soul yet before I'm ready for all that. But I want to be a church lady. I want to be among that group of people who are identified as an Easter people. And I want to make very sure that all those around me will be encouraged by my presence. In the New York Review of Books, There was a book on identity, and the reviewer makes this observation. Listen, he says, ever since Aristotle, philosophers have observed that we move from babyhood to adulthood by acquiring habitual allegiances to people, places, and values, and that only when that process is accomplished do we have the ability to pause and to reflect on which of these allegiances to retain and to reject. Now, you hear what he's saying? All these babies that are among us, that are born among us, go from babyhood to adulthood, picking up habitual allegiances to people, places, or values. And that at a certain time, they sort through them, which to retain and which to discard. Now, here's a word to all the young parents. The very best thing you can do for your children is to show them by the way you live how much you like the people of God, how much you like drawing near to the God of all mercies. I mean, it's not the only thing, but it's a huge thing. If we're constantly critical, I think if we're constantly picking at the church, picking at the theology that we hear, then when our children get at a certain age, they will say, well, I don't need that. It's brought nothing but misery to my parents. You see, it is so important, even if you don't have any children, to be here and to make very sure that your presence will make these children of ours want to say when they become 20, I may want to lose a lot, but the one thing that I do not want to lose is great worship and a people of God who are loving and who seek to do the things of God in the world. Our writer says, do not neglect to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. So if that first business was the negative, the second is really the challenge to celebrate this Easter faith. To make this faith something just desirable, so that those children of ours will say, that's one people that I will embrace. That's one goal that I will make my own. But there's a second thing, or a third thing. Not only is there this negative, then the third thing is that we celebrate. Third thing, that we provoke each other. You see that, how to provoke one another to love and good deeds. This word provoke, arouse, it's usually a negative kind of thing. You know, who provoked that now? I mean, who set that loose? But here it's positive. To provoke. To bring a person or a community to flourishing. To provoke goodness among ourselves. Lynn van der Zee, I don't know, some of you know him. He's a minister at South Bend, and he's the one that gave me the idea of this series. But Lynn, in a sermon on this faithfulness, says, well, his wife Judy, his first wife, had MS, and life was just very hard for them at a point. Oh, it was very hard. And Lynn said there was a point where he was just about undone, and then he picked up the banner, and there was a piece in there by Dale Cooper, who is a member of our church and chaplain at the college. And Dale had written a piece about his family, his mother and his father. His mother, Dale's mother, contracted polio soon after Dale was born and was for the rest of her life in an iron lung. And Dale in that piece talked about the faithfulness of his father and the faithfulness of his mother, and how the room where the iron lung was kept became a sanctuary. And Lynn said, I began to see that faithfulness was more than a duty. It was this wonderful opportunity to create community and harmony. And he said he read that piece and he went back into his own difficult situation to be faithful. You see, and I was thinking, you could sit in a church like this, and I was going to mention names, but then I thought, oh, I might miss somebody, and that would not be good. But there are parents here, for instance, who have children with disabilities. Just imagine it. Or there are people here who sit in wheelchairs. Just imagine it. And here they are, worshiping and praising God. There are people here who've lost their children, and they're singing songs of praise. There are people here who went through a terrible divorce, but they're both here because they want to be faithful to their children and they want their children to love the church. All kinds of ways in which people are trying to be faithful. I mean, we don't always make a good show of it, but so many of us try very hard to be faithful, to be dependable, to be that face in the congregation that our children can look at and say, boy, there's something about this faith that makes good people. That really does wonderful things. You know, just little things. You know, when my mother died and then Carol's mother died, we got all these cards. Now, I know, I'm the minister, so that made it sort of, you're going to send cards. But anyway, I think there are a number of us, do it simply as a faithful practice. Just a faithful practice. And it's a wonderful practice. I tell you, I kept them all. I once visited someone who's a doctor. He'd been sick. He says, Jack, I've got 132 cards. And my first thought was, he counted them. He did. Faithfulness. On my voicemail, Sharon Johnson, at first I thought she said that her mother had died. But now I think her mother is dying and they've brought her to hospice. But now Sharon Johnson, African-American, on the fringes, wouldn't it be wonderful if the faithfulness of this congregation reached out to her? And I know it's just a one-shot deal, but maybe that would become a habit of ours, to become faithful. You know, her mother would sit right over there. And she paid me once the biggest compliment. She came up to me and she says, you could have preached that in a black church. And you know, and now she's dying. And Sharon is here all by herself with her little girl. Faithfulness for one another. It's in these little things. And not just sporadically, though it might begin sporadically, but faithful. It is not a glamorous virtue, but all the other virtues depend on it. Our life together depends on faithfulness. Our life with God depends on faithfulness. So let us be faithful to our identity as an Easter people. Amen.